All right, good afternoon. So thanks for joining us. So let's get started. So my name is Sunil, and I'm the principal PM in the Azure SQL engineering team and lead the managed service for Postgres. So joining me here are two customers, Irakli from Credo 360, who's going to come on stage at a little bit later and talk about their story and their experience using the managed service. And similarly, on the left, on my left, I have Eric Spear, and he's also going to be joining me on stage to talk to all of us about his story and experience using the managed service. So with that, let's get started. So how many people were excited about the announcement today? Thank you. So the agenda for us is that I'm going to first talk about some of the mechanics around how we went about creating the service, and talk a little more in terms of giving you a conceptual understanding of how we build the service so that you know what does it mean to operate with the service. And then I'm going to be inviting on stage Eric and Irakli, who are going to share us their experiences using the service, and also what have they learned and what have they got, what have they achieved. And then I'm going to conclude with giving you a little bit more insights on which regions we're available. But if you're already been an eager monger, you have already gone to our website, you would have seen the links, and you know all the regions, then perhaps it'll go much, much faster. And then we'll leave enough time for our Q&A. All right, so let's get started with explaining the Azure Database Platform. So this platform, until today, at least publicly, had been what was powering Azure SQL DB and Data Warehouse. And today, because now we are adding additional services, that's MySQL and Postgres, now we call it as a Database Platform Services. And this platform is built on the scalable Azure compute and storage that is available in over 38 regions. That's more than any other cloud in the world. And as you all know, SQL DB is available in all those 38 regions. And now sitting on that platform, now we will be bringing the MySQL and the PostgreSQL database engines across all the regions. Of course, not at day one, but by our general availability, we'll be in all regions where SQL DB is. Now, as you all are familiar with, or may be familiar with, this database services platform that has been powering Azure SQL DB and the data warehouse has been built around three thrusts. It's intelligent, it's flexible, and it's a trusted platform. What do I mean by that? Let me talk about flexible. What I mean by that is now all the database services that you're creating are fully isolated. You have a guarantee of resources, and they are resource governed. That means when you create your server, you create your databases, that resources are guaranteed for you and not shared with any other instances. And then you can elastically scale those instances as the demand on your workload changes. And within this database platform is also got other managed services capabilities all built as microservices within the platform. And that powers backup, automated backup, the restore, the point in time restore capability, the auditing capability, the threat detection, and much more. And it is intelligent, where today with Azure SQL Database, you already have performance advisors, database workload insights, et cetera. So all of these combined together that has been powering SQL Database and Warehouse, and now just simply extended to the community editions of Postgres and MySQL. And that is what we are announcing today. And this platform, what you also get is integration with all the rest of the app and the data services on Azure. And all those integrations are out of the box. So with that, let me go a little bit deeper into what do you really get with Azure Database for PostgreSQL. Now to explain that, let's take a developer persona. Now a developer, a cloud developer, an app developer, the first thing that he would care about is, I want to be able to deploy an application on the fly in minutes. Yes, every managed services provide that. We also provide that. But what differentiates this is we give you built-in high availability. Now, what does built-in high availability mean? You do not need to set up another replica, you configure and set the replication, manage, monitor, all that you do not have to do anymore. And then once you have provision, once you have deployed your resources, this is an app developer's nightmare. How much resources do I need to allocate for my instances? What do I know? My goal is to make my app successful, widely successful, take it global, and be rich, and get the satisfaction. But I don't know how much resources I need today. I only want to use the resources that I want and I'm consuming now, and then be able to elastically scale without the app, without any application downtime. And that empowers developers to not worry about infrastructure in terms of performance management. I start with some performance levels, and then I change the performance levels elastically on the fly. And now, also, the most important element is security. As an app developer, I do not know what should I do for security. I trust you are the data, if Azure Data Services is the expert in databases, they better do whatever they do and make my data secure. I do not need to have another additional consideration around, do I need to enable encryption on my data? Do I need to enable encryption on my backup? What does that mean to my application? So all that worry is now taken away from the developer because it's security enabled by default out of the box. So data on disk is encrypted. Data in motion is also encrypted via SSL, all by default out of the box. Now let's go about the managed service capabilities. Automatic backups. Everybody gives you automatic backups. We also give you my automatic backups. But what is again truly differentiating is as I take my backups, and I want to restore to any point up to 35 days, now who's going to manage the storage capacity for those backups? App developer, or you rather have the service do it by themselves? Like there are some services that allow you to, they give you some certain amount of storage, and then if you use more, then you pay extra. Then if I have to pay extra, then I have to manage it. I have to monitor it. I have to perhaps create alerts and see my bill every month, and why is it changing every month? So with our service, you get the backups with the storage for retention for up to 35 days. So another less worry as an app developer in terms of using the service. And finally, what is it all good if all this goodness means I have to rewrite my app, I have to change something and get my application do something different? It becomes not portable anymore. So this PostgreSQL service, by virtue of using the community edition, is the same Postgres that you would use anywhere else, on-prem, or in the cloud, running on ISVM. It's the same Postgres engine, which means the native integrations, the native drivers, the native libraries, everything that works in your on-prem or anywhere else works seamlessly using this managed service as well. And now, all good, right? There must be some catch. Absolutely no catch. All of this is inclusive in one simple pricing model. We are not counting pennies. Okay, if you do this, 10 cents extra, or if you do that, another 20 cents. No, everything is inclusive in one simple pricing that a customer can understand, a developer can understand, so that they have predictability in terms of what they're paying and the benefits that they're getting. And within this, the ones that I did not talk about is monitoring. You can do historical monitoring and preserve the metrics for up to 30 days. You have access to logs with retention up to 7 days. Again, all included in one simple pricing without any additional cost. That's the value of a managed service as we see it, and we believe it's also unique in the industry compared to any other cloud providers. So with that, let's take some time and let's take moments and talk about a bit of service fundamentals. Now, I'm sure each one of you in this audience today have some resource that they have provisioned on Azure. And With Azure Database for PostgreSQL, it's no different. So you have an Azure account, you have a subscription, and then you create a resource group to group all the related resources, for example, all the resources that your project requires into a resource group, and then you provision resources. And in our service, the resource is essentially a server. What does that mean? It means it's a logical server. It's not a physical entity. It's the connection endpoint to your service. That means you connect directly to the server. You can create one to multiple databases within that PostgreSQL cluster. All the resources required for those databases are shared within that cluster. And of course, this resource, this logical server, is pinned to a region. And then all the management operations on this resource is at the server level. That means backups, monitoring, logs. All the management operations are done at this database cluster or at the server level, not at the individual databases level. Okay, so with that conceptual model in mind, let me now take you through what does it mean to create, connect, and manage. So what you see here is a blue cloud, it's an Azure cloud, and I have a PostgreSQL database server provisioned, which is pinned to a region. And then what I show you is the Azure Database Management Service layer, which is our control plane. So all the requests talk through our management services layer, which is and the control plane, which is integrated into the Azure Resource Manager, or the ARM that you are all familiar with. So which means you get the integration with all the ARM APIs and the other and integration with other resources within Azure. And you can deploy it via an Azure CLI. We support Azure CLI 2.0. We support through the portal. Or you can use any third-party or open-source automation frameworks, be it you can use Terraform, if you like, you can use Chef, Puppet, you name it. You can use your favorite management infrastructure tools and deploy and manage. And then about connectivity, you're using the native Postgres protocol to talk to the service. So what you see is the data plane operation here. So you can use the You can have your application, which simply points to the service, uses the native protocol, and things, therefore, work seamlessly. Similarly, you can bring any tools. You can use your favorite tools, your open source tools, like pgAdmin, or third-party tools, or like third-party management or monitoring tools, like Datadog or whatever that is, and connect to the service, because they're all talking the same common native Postgres version 3 protocol. And now, let me talk a little bit more about the security. I said about the three layers of defense that is being engineered for the service. One is, of course, the usual Postgres SQL identity-based authentication. That means you create users, you create roles, and you manage your security, which is managed at the database level. And then we have our own services access control via firewall rules. And every server that is created by default is secured, and then you have to enable the client IP addresses that can talk to the service. So that's the layer of defense you have. And then also, any client connections that needs to talk to the database server has to talk via SSL. But we also recognize that in the open source world, not all application frameworks support SSL as much as we would like. So we had to go create an option so that our service works seamlessly to where the developers and where the open source ecosystem is today, and optionally allow users to disable SSL. But it's an optional flag. It's enabled by default, but optionally you can disable it. And then, as I've already mentioned, All data on disk is encrypted by default, including the backups. So basically these are all the different three layers of defense that is built in into the service and is also part of this relational database platform services that we have built that powers all the other Azure SQL and SQL Data Warehouse service. So now, as I've talked to about the security and all the fundamentals, let me also spend a few minutes explaining the service tiers. So what do you get, what do you buy? So the service is organized very simply in three service tiers: basic, standard, and premium. All right, what is basic, or when do I use standard, and when do I use premium? So think about basic as a tier that you would choose if you are running simple, small workloads that are not very I/O intensive or does not need a lot of I/O. You would want to use standard service tier if you care for performance, you care for flexible scaling from as little as like a core to many number of cores, and you need more guarantee of IO performance, then you would choose standard. And you would choose premium if you need all these what I talked about in standard, but you want extremely low IO latency. Each of these service tiers has different amount of scaling metrics that it can go up to. For example, basic will go like have 50 to 100 compute units. So what is a compute unit? A compute unit is simply a measure of computing throughput with predetermined or pre-configured amount of memory. And they are optimized differently for each service tiers. So standard and premium will scale equally from 100 compute units to up to 2,000 compute units. So you can think of 100 compute units is equivalent to approximately one core. And as far as the storage scaling is concerned, we will support up to 4 terabytes with the premium tier, and today on the standard up to 1 terabyte, and we are working towards increasing the scale limits over the next several months, and before general availability, we would have a much higher scaling numbers across standard and premium. Now, all these service tiers have the same programming surface. For example, whatever works with PostgreSQL 9.5 and 9.6 works seamlessly against the service. And you have a consistent management via portal, ARM, RESTful APIs, or through this Azure CLI. So what is available now at previews, like today? Today we have basic and standard that is enabled in across 11 regions in 4 geos. And towards the tail end of the presentation, I'll talk to you about in which regions we are available. And we can scale up to 1 terabyte and up to 800 compute units. So with that, now I talked about a lot of benefits, a lot of advantages, and so on. But now what I would like to do is to invite Eric Speer from Higher Ed Profiles onto the stage to have him explain and take us through his experience of using the service and how he went about migrating his existing PostgreSQL database onto the service. So with that, Eric, why don't you take it away?
Thank you, Sunil. A couple years ago, some friends of mine who are higher education professionals and also IT professionals got together to form a company with a vision to instill a sense of strategic data-driven decision-making in colleges and universities. And by strategic data, I mean enterprise data about things like student retention rate, student graduation rate, incoming freshman SAT scores, these types of big picture trends that all colleges and universities need to make good long-term decisions. Now, colleges and universities have a lot of data in their databases about students. classes, scheduling grades, facilities, faculty. However, they often struggle getting that data out to their stakeholders. Now, there are a lot of tools out there that do this. This isn't anything new. However, for some of the smaller schools, and you can see my daughter is the CIO of a very small school, they really, today, even today, are still distributing that data using PDFs, using Excel spreadsheets. You know, you'd be shocked in 2017, but that's the state of it, because the typical enterprise reporting tools have a lot of barriers for these smaller schools. So, the cloud as a concept, of course, is kind of new in terms of the long-term time horizon of computing. And so when the cloud as a concept became available, we realized there's another way for schools, smaller schools, to achieve some of the same reporting goals that the bigger players have managed. And so we created a SaaS model where the colleges, our clients, upload their data to the cloud, and then we run an ETL process that enables the distribution of that data through their web browsers. When we first began on this journey, our team was composed mostly of professionals who had a lot of familiarity with the usual enterprise tools like Oracle, SAP, and the like. That was our default position. However, we realized we really needed to, again, from a value standpoint, keep our costs low, and those costs would be transferred onto our clients. And so we decided to go down the path of open source software. And actually, we were really excited as we got into it more and more, that not only was it the right thing to do in terms of cost, but it actually accelerated our development time. Because when you go into it with a vibrant community, with a rich ecosystem of components, there's a lot of things that are already built for you, a lot of help out there, and you really have a good, quick time to product completion. And also, if you're doing open source, you'll see that a lot of stuff is ubiquitous, and you have a lot of portability in where you bring your solution. In fact, we began on Amazon a couple years ago and moved to Azure without any problems because, again, we were using kind of industry standard components. Our Azure architecture simplified looks like this. We use blob storage so the clients can upload their data to our cloud system. They upload that securely. They upload that daily for enrollment data. Then we have the database, and this is what we'd mostly be talking about today, but we needed to use Postgres, and we need, therefore, in Azure, to build a Linux VM where we installed the Postgres cluster on top of that. Each client has their own database, all running in the same cluster on that VM. We're leveraging the web apps, again, because we want as much as possible to have someone else manage some of the details about all of these services. And so we've leveraged an app service for each client. We've leveraged an app service for the front-end files, the static files. And then we have an app service that handles the back-end, the communication between the client and the Postgres database. And we're running Node for that. Our components are rather typical. Our front-end is running Angular. The back-end is running Sales and, like I said, Node. And the back-end does some of the other magical things as well, all running in the web app service. And we're leveraging the things like continuous integration, the deployment slots, and all those other things that just make it easier for us. When you have a very small company, you really want to spend time adding value and not worrying about those other issues. So looking at the architecture, you can see the thing that we are managing every day is the database. We're responsible for maintaining the security patches on the OS and on the database. We're responsible for storage. We're responsible for making backups. We're responsible for tuning. None of our customers care about any of that. And for us, if we can get out of that business and instead focus on things, feature requests that the customer wants, that's a much better place to be. So, when we heard about the preview for the managed Postgres, we got right on board, and we wanted to give it a try. So I'm going to share with you the steps we took to migrate our existing Postgres database to the managed service. First, We use a portal to create the database service. It was very easy, just a few clicks. I know people always say that, but it actually is true in this case. Export your existing database using pgdump. That's a very common way for Postgres to export the data. Then, before you do the import, create the database on the managed service, and then create the users you're going to be having on that managed service. The last step to getting your database ready is to actually import the data. Just to show you what it looks like in terms of the connection string within our sales program, this is an example. You can see there's really nothing fancy here. There are two things I want to highlight. First, the username for the managed service, the username we created is web user, but you add the @ and the database name on the end. Okay, that's one thing to be aware of. And then also you'll notice that we decided to keep the SSL equals true for obvious reasons, for better security. So what were the results of our tests? You can see we were very happy. No, I have a little bit more detail. First, I say up here 1 day of effort, and it is true, the first time I did this, it took me 1 day. However, that's because I didn't know what I was doing. I've done it now a lot of times, and it actually takes, you know, half an hour to migrate a single database onto the managed service. So it really is very easy. Another thing that's really cool about it, you know, you've managed to do migrations from one system to another, and oftentimes you have to go in there and change your code to little quirky things to make it work. Really, the node stuff worked fine without changing our queries at all. All we did was change the connection string, and then it really worked fine. We didn't try out Backup Restore, but I can tell you again, I'm really looking forward to being able to have a managed service take care of the backup restore just the way Sunil described, because it's one of those things that, you know, you really have to make sure it's working, because if you don't do it and then it doesn't work, then you're in a real problem. And people say, why didn't you have it working, right? So, but you'll know about that. Performance was good. We're running a pretty powerful VM, and so the preview had a smaller VM, and so some of our larger queries were obviously not as fast, but for all the regular queries and for all of our connectivity, there were really no issues, and so we were pleased with the outcome. All right, so the question is, you say, Eric, you already have a working database, working on Linux, it's fine, nothing wrong with it. Why bother moving to a managed service? Well, I can tell you, and you'll run into this. A few months ago, I had a customer who had a certain feature request that they wanted, and I realized the only way to make that work is if I leverage a new capability that was available in Postgres version 9.5, and I'm running 9.1. All right, well, okay. I can do an upgrade. I know how to do that. All right, so I'm going to start doing that, and I start doing that. And then I get halfway through, and it's, oh, your version of Linux is too old. You have to upgrade your OS. Okay, all right. I'm going to start, okay. Upgrade the OS in the cloud. It's not the funnest thing, but anyway, I'll do that. Upgrade the OS. I get about halfway through, and I ran out of disk space. You know what? None of that is fun. And none of that the customer is going to be excited about. They don't even know or care. So, again, if you can get out of that, for a very small company, they don't have the resources to do that type of management. If you can get out of that game and let the Postgres managed service take care of those updates, take care of those improvements, that's the best way to go. Secondly, one question we get a lot when we're talking to customers, prospective customers, is, you know, they hear the word the cloud and they get very nervous. Now, you can explain it to them as many times as you want that it's secure, but still they get very nervous. And the more you can tell them about how it's secure, and this is one of those ways, by talking about the database being very secure, that gives them another reassurance that their trust in you is not misplaced. Okay.
All right. Thanks, Eric. So Eric wanted to actually give you a presentation on how his experience was, but I said, I'm not going to settle for that. And whatever he just said, I want him to prove through a live demo that you can really do that. So that's what now Eric is going to go into the portal and show you how the live migration works. Eric?
I'm ready.
Yep.
All right. First, I'll just show you what the screen looks like for the portal. You can see the name of the database is HEP-DW1. And you can see we're running 9.5 and the basic tier. The first step for us, this is our existing, this is on a staging environment, and this is our existing setup. In our connection, we have to change two things. The host name, obviously, which we put in the new name. And like I said, we also need to change the name of the user because we need to append the name of the database onto the end. Okay. Let's save those changes. All right, so that's all I needed to change for the Node application. It uses those environment variables in the program itself to access the database. Now let's look at the migration. I'm going to start with the end, which is the import. The import is a PSQL statement, and you pass it the result of a PG dump that I had done previously. Okay, so I've already dumped out my original data set, and we'll just start that import now. All right. While the import is running, I want to share with you the script that I run to prepare the import. So in reality, I'd run this script first, but I'd rather have, in order for time, let the import run now, and then I'll show you how it works. So the script looks like this. Again, I create my target database. That's the first statement. Just for security purposes, I do some revoke statements on the public user and the public schema. I have two users in my system. I have a user that owns the objects, and I have a user that Node uses to connect. So in both cases, I create the users, and I assign the privileges. The next step, though, is something I wanted to highlight that really, I mean, those steps are common to any import and any typical Postgres import. This, however, is a little bit different for the managed service, and I wanted to highlight that. When we first built this on Linux, we owned the database. We were super user. We controlled everything, and so we could do anything we wanted to, right? In a managed service, you don't have super user privileges. So you have to be thinking about that sometimes when you have certain scripts. In this case, for example, the original script had the create schema HEPDW with the authorization clause, which means that HEPDW owns the schema. You can't do that in this case because we don't have super user privileges. However, this is an example where there's a workaround where we simply reconnect as the user we want to be that's going to own the schema, and then that user simply does the create statement, create each schema, each of the three schemas, okay? So that's just an example of some of the things to consider. Finally, secure the three schemas and run the import would be the last step. Let's see if the import is done. The import is done. So let's see if we can log in to the system. So this is the portal to log in to the application. And I'm going to log in as guest, which is open to the public. This is kind of their public fact book for this client. And now I can say, let's look at a report, explore headcount by term. So this is showing number of students enrolled by term over the past 7 years, it looks like. And then you could say, for example, we want to see that broken out by gender and, whoops, And then you can see it broken out by gender. So you can see it, really, no code changes required on the back end. You simply repoint your connection string to the managed service, and then away you go. And it's all working fine.
Thank you, Eric.
You're welcome.
So what you saw here is not only how easy it was to migrate the database, but it was super awesome that he did not have to change anything to the application. And to protect his student data, he would leverage the built-in security features of the service. So he can just simply focus on growing his business and taking it to new levels and innovate faster. So now let me invite on stage another customer of ours, Irakli from Credo 360, and learn from him how he is working to solve his problems and innovating on Azure and running the PostgreSQL service. So, Irakli?
Thank you very much, Sunil. Hello, everyone. Very excited to be here and tell you about Credo 360 and how we're leveraging Azure and the new managed Postgres service. So, first of all, what is Credo 360? Basically, the idea for the company came out from my negative experience with a landlord I had. I was moving from New York to California, and the landlord in New York retained a very large portion of my security deposit, very unfairly retained it. And he basically told me, if you want to get it back, just go to court. And I was very frustrated. To be honest, the amount wasn't big enough for me to go to court, but you know, I was very upset about it. And the thing that upset me the most is that I couldn't let anybody know to be careful with this guy, so you need to be extra careful when dealing with him. And there is really no way you can do that right now anywhere. So Credo 360 was born out of that. Credo 360 is a P2P review platform where you can figure out if you can trust somebody you've never met, you can see if the people are credible, and then you can deal with people on the platform, chat, conduct transactions, and then at the end you can rate and review them, and they can rate and review you back, and that kind of feeds into your reputation. And then the best thing that we figured out is how to do it without sacrificing anybody's privacy and maintaining anonymity. So you can know if you can trust somebody you've never met, but without actually knowing who that person is. That's really great. One thing that we're not a marketplace. We're not trying to create another Craigslist or eBay or Airbnb or anything of that sort. We think your reputation should belong to you as a person, and you should be able to take your reputation from one platform to another, from one vertical to another, because you know it's your asset, and you should be able to leverage it to simplify transactions and dealing with people in the future. So once we decided to build that, we had to figure out what technology stack to use. And we're a startup, so we had a few needs. The first thing that we wanted to do is, because we're a small team, we wanted to make sure we can leverage the same resources on the front end and back end, swap engineers and help out. So we wanted to use the same language for both front end and back end development. We also wanted to make sure that we're doing it in a type-safe environment so we can catch bugs fairly early in the development process. And the next point is that we knew that this service is something that people, almost everybody really in the world needs. So we wanted to make it scalable right out of the box and make sure that it's built on a rock solid foundation. But at the same time, we also knew that we need to change things as we develop, because we didn't know where we started. And in fact, where we ended up now, the schema is dramatically different from where we started. So we wanted to make sure that the schema could be evolved very quickly. Lastly, again, we're a startup, we're resource constrained, so we couldn't really rely on expensive solutions or tooling. So open source stack was a natural solution for us. So these are the solutions that we're using. On the back end, it's Node.js with Socket.io. We're using TypeScript to ensure type safety. Visual Studio Code is a really great development tool to use with TypeScript, and we're leveraging it a lot. For the database, we chose Postgres because arguably it's one of the best databases out there, very stable, great community support, a lot of features, and so forth. We're, to make sure our schema stays flexible, we make heavy use of JSONB in the database, and that allows us to update schemas almost seamlessly. So once we had our technology stack, we needed to figure out where to host it, and we chose Microsoft Azure. And the primary reason was that everything that we decided to go was plugged in seamlessly into the services that Azure had. And there are just a couple of examples there. For example, deploying Node.js server with a Socket.io and continuous integration from GitHub was really just a few minutes work. and then setting it up in such a way that it scales automatically, both on the Node.js, on the web server, as well as on the socket server, using Redis as a backend adapter was super easy, just a few minutes as well. The other benefits that come with Azure, Eric and Sunil mentioned them already, but it's basically we don't spend a lot of time on managing infrastructure. There is a whole bunch of services out there that we can use within Azure to make the platform even more scalable and even more reliable, you know, such as storage, CDN, cache, and so forth. High availability, reliability, and security are built in. And we're a global service. We have users from Philippines, Japan, Ukraine. So we want to make sure that we are able to reach them on a global scale, and Azure can provide that. All right. So this is a little bit about how our architecture is set up right now. We're using a lot of Azure services. Actually, it's just a subset. I couldn't put all of them on the slide. But at the core, there are web servers, stateless Node.js servers that can be scaled very easily. We use Azure Web Jobs to offload some tasks from the web servers. We use Redis Cache. We use Blob Storage, CDN, and so forth. Before the managed service was available for Postgres, we used Postgres on a Linux VM. And in fact, this is the only kind of troublesome part of the architecture, in my opinion, where this is the only self-managed component. And being a self-managed component, there are a few challenges that come with it. Those challenges are around tuning, scaling, and reliability. Tuning, basically, we don't have the expertise. There is a myriad of parameters in Postgres that you can set up to make sure that you optimize for performance. We don't have the expertise to do that. It's difficult to monitor and figure out which queries are causing bottlenecks, and that really makes it difficult for us to create performant applications. In terms of scaling, there is really no way to dynamically scale the application. We don't have the expertise or, frankly, the time needed to figure out how we can set up multiple replicas. And in terms of reliability, we don't have hot standbys. And right now we do full VM backups, but it's, to be honest, not as seamless as I would like it to be able to do point-in-time restores. With managed Postgres, all of this problems go away. First, it eliminates the last self-managed component that we have in our architecture. Now we don't really, actually never have to worry about the infrastructure. We don't have to worry about the OS, database versioning, and so forth. It easily plugs in, just like Eric showed, into our existing architecture. All we had to do after migration is change the connection string. And then, you know, scalability, high availability, backups, performance monitoring, come standard, you know, you'll see in a second. It's really awesome how it is done in Azure. We can monitor our queries, we can scale things on the fly and so forth. So what this boils down to really is that we have more time to focus on our app. We don't want to spend time on infrastructure and management and so forth. We want to spend time on building features that people want and bringing people onto our platform. And that is what the managed service allows us to do.
All right, thanks, Irakli. So what you find here is that Credo 360, for example, has bet on the Azure platform because he knows that he wants to scale his company globally. He's a startup, but his vision is to scale globally across all as many geos as possible, and that when he does that, or he chooses to do that, he has Azure region available to go and scale. Irakli also highlighted the need for monitoring and performance and scale, right? He's a startup. He doesn't want to overspend on infrastructure. He wants to focus on today and making sure that whatever he's investing today is capable of taking him to where he needs to, simply and flexibly and without much re-architecture or changes. So that is what we are going to do next, is we are going to demonstrate, or Irakli is going to demonstrate, and I'm going to be his puppet executing the commands on how he goes about doing and handling this in the managed service.
All right. So what we have is we've set up a staging environment. This is the data that, and schema in the data that we use in test. Set up in a separate environment. And we have a front end written in Python that is going to run kind of actually already running a set of five queries in a loop against this staging environment. This is basically simulating the user load that would a typical user would experience when they log in, retrieve their account information, browse the app, view their messages, view their contact list, and so forth. So basically, this is simulating user load that would be very typical. Now, with this, this is a new monitoring kind of tab within Azure, and we can see that at this level the load is super high. It's over 80%, actually close to 90% probably. And if I was in a self-managed Linux VM, I would be worried at this point because I don't know what to do. I need to shut down this. I need to. It's not a straightforward thing to migrate on a self-managed service. So in here, what we can do is just start scaling with a click of a button. So Sunil is going to go to a tab where we can now scale the database. And he is basically just going to double the performance or throughput of the database within a click. It's going to take a little bit of time, probably like around a minute, to scale the database. You can see if you go back to the shell, you will see how it's paused the connections. So now, while the server is scaling, it paused the connections. And while it's doing that, there is another neat capability. I don't want to be able to monitor this tab all the time to see if where the server load is. So we can go and actually set up alerts on the server load, very simple. Here are some alerts that are being set up. This alert says whenever the compute exceeds 40%, I think, in this case, it will generate an alert and send an email, in this case, to Sunil. So you can set up any kind of threshold here, and you can see how and when the threshold was triggered. Sunil received an email probably about the load here, saying, hey, this is the workload was over 40%. And that is like super simple. At this point, I can go and say, hey, workload exceeded certain threshold, let me go and now scale the operation. And by this point in time, you can see the scaling operation has been completed. So now it's just resume running the same queries in the loop, almost no interruption at all to the clients and so forth. So it really happened within a minute. I was able to double the capacity of the database, and now I can serve the queries again and have the responsive and reliable app.
All right, thank you. And hopefully you saw how simple it is, not only migrate, don't change anything in the app, but then also be able to scale flexibly whenever your demand for the workload changes. So through the voice of two customers here, both startups, coincidentally, you see the common challenges, the pain points, which should be similar to anybody of you out here. It's the same common challenges. And you see how the managed services are allowing them to defocus on the mundane database management tasks and instead focus on their business and scaling their apps. So whether be it you are a PHP developer or a Node.js developer or any developer, or you're using any frameworks, this service is designed to run and work seamlessly without having you to change anything. And that's the power of the managed services that we focused on and what we are delivering to you. So where are we available? If you haven't already seen, we are today available in 11 regions across 4 geographies, US, Europe, Asia, and Japan, with the goal that we will be in all the global Azure regions by the general availability timeframe. And this view will be iterated and changed very rapidly over the next several weeks and months. So what are you waiting for? You should go get started and try it today. So we have quick starts, we have samples, we have a GitHub repo where you can access a lot of pre-created samples and get to try and learn and experience all the benefits that we talked about and went through today, even using the examples of HireRed Profile and Credo 360. So here are a few call to action. So here you would find a link to our GitHub repo where you would find some
ARM templates as an example that you could use to deploy your PostgreSQL databases. The link to documentation. We are already live and have a link on MSDN and Stack Overflow. And also, if you have requests for features, we are just in preview. So this is just a starting step for us. We recognize that we do not have all the capabilities to round out and say that, yes, this is everything that you can ever find in a managed service. There are ways and things for us to do, and we want to do it based on your feedback, based on what you think is most important to you and what allows you to get a maximum value. Please do follow us on the Twitter. So you would find the Twitter handle here as well. Went live this morning as Scott announced our service. And I will be available throughout the next 3 days. We'll be hanging around here right now after the presentation and also at the hub and the expo area. So if you have any questions, please do feel free to ask about them. So with that, please also complete an evaluation form and provide your feedback and how this presentation was able to satisfy or help answer some of the questions that you hoped would be addressed in the session. So thank you so much. With that, I would invite Eric and Irakli back on stage and see if you have any questions. We have, I guess, about another 8 minutes or so for Q&A. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So you mentioned that it ships with high availability by default?
Yes.
How? Like, is it actually running a replica, or is it some other way that that's done?
So the high availability is implemented in the database platform services itself. And essentially, at a very simplistic level, without going into too much of technical details, the data is already replicated in the storage. And when an instance were to go down, we would spin up the instance very quickly and then redirect the connection to the new instance. That is why you see that it maximum you would see about 60 seconds or so.
Okay, so it's not active master. It's not master master.
No, it's not master master.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, sure.
So on the slide showed encryption. So encryption at rest.
Yes.
Do you support the capabilities for bring your own key?
Good question. So today, the keys are all system managed, and we will be looking to provide user-managed and supporting user-managed keys in the future.
And then one other question about encryption and encryption at rest. Dealing with local data, data residency issues, anything about, let's say, for example, if your data is in the UK, it can't be stored in the US.
Mm-hmm.
Any like replication in specific, like anything to deal with that, with like replication from different regions and where to replicate and where you can't replicate?
Yeah, so the replication is done using the same standard Azure GeoPair regions, which are already protected from making sure that the data sovereignty laws are taken care of. For example, our replication doesn't mean that we are replicating data from US to Europe. So it's in the same GeoPair regions that we'll be replicating the data to.
Yeah, I probably didn't ask the question correctly. So let's say I have a database, a multi-tenant database. Mm-hmm. In that database, I'll have users that are coming in with data from, let's say, the US and non-US. Is there any way to intelligently know what to replicate or to replicate a multi-tenant database into different regions?
No. We do not have that. That capability. Yeah. Yes.
It's in preview now. What regions is it available in?
Yes, so it's. I said it's available in 11 regions. So US East 2,
yeah.
US East, North Central US,
UK,
South Central US, not in UK today.
Okay.
And Japan East, Japan West, Southeast Asia,
okay.
East Asia.
And then my next question.
Sorry?
Yes.
In Europe, yes. North Europe and West Europe.
We heard a lot this morning about how a lot of the machine learning and cognitive services are being built around Azure,
yes.
Around SQL Azure and things mm-hmm. like that.
Mm-hmm.
Can you say anything about sort of the time frame in which some of those similar services might start to get built around
yeah.
this storage technology?
That's a very good question. So now that we've just gotten started, all those integration is very important next steps for us. And as we are looking towards the next step of integration, we have a lot of opportunities. For example, integrating with Azure Data Factory, integrating with Azure Data Lake, integrating it with the SQL Data Warehouse. If you want to move data into the gigantic and maintain an enterprise data warehouse in SQL DW. So while all these integration points make a lot of good sense, we are keenly waiting to hear from what users and customers want us to do. Because it would perhaps be a while before, I mean, a while in the cloud is relatively small, but regardless, it's a lot of work for us to go and do all of that at once. So we want to make sure that the way we are looking at prioritizing is consistent with what customers are looking to do with the service. But yes, I mean, you can think about our approach starting with, say, Azure Data Factory, for example. I mean, that's a foundational service and the data. So we'd start and grow from there.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, sure.
You mentioned that I think you switched from AWS at one point, and I was just wondering if you would care to compare and contrast.
I would say, again, because all of our technology was open source. We weren't leveraging anything necessarily specific to AWS, so it was an easy move to Azure. Now, once we landed on Azure, we decided to investigate and take advantage of some of the managed services like the web apps service and the app service plan. So we've been pretty pleased with how that worked out. And otherwise, from the users, the customers had no idea. They don't know or care what's on the back end.
If there are no any other questions, so thanks for coming in, and we hope if you have any further questions during this conference, so please do feel free to come to the data booth at the expo, and we'll be glad to answer any of them. Thank you so much.